Good afternoon, Isle of Faces listeners. You're listening to another Isle of Faces minicast on the TV show and season 8. Happy Death Day, everybody. We're all gearing up for what is sure to be an absolutely brutal, horrible, and unenjoyable evening. Of course, it will actually be enjoyable, sure to be another brilliant episode, although last week is hard to top.
But it's also going to be a very, very difficult watch. I think we're all expecting, and rightfully expecting, some favourites to go down, and probably not in the nicest of ways. We've been pretty spoilt. First two episodes have been about as nice as Game of Thrones episodes can be. So now the needle's about to swing. We're going to get the other side of the spectrum.
Speaking of brutal emotional pain, myself and Lady Buckley went to see Avengers Endgame on Friday. Do not worry, we'll spoil nothing. We are not like that. Suffice to say, we're still reeling. Or I don't know how she is, but I certainly am. I had no emotional control during that film whatsoever. Might have easily broken Lady Buckley's hand on three separate occasions. There were tears. There were laughs also, but more tears. More emotional pain. So at least I've had a warm-up for tonight, but still going to hit me hard, I think. Very quickly, before we do move on, I've got to say that film, again, no spoilers, don't worry, but
it is everything you could ever want it to be and a lot more. If you haven't seen it already, go and see it, and go and see it again. We're definitely going to have to. Not just brutal emotional pain, also a fantastic film. And I'll say no more, but we are very, very lucky to be having that film and Game of Thrones right now. Does mean my eyes are literally dry as dawn, but apart from that, stupidly lucky. Anyway.
Either way, today, before taking our naps for the 2 a.m. showing here in slightly cloudy England, we are going to shine the spotlight on A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms one last time. We're going to be looking at the episode's various interruptions today. We're going to be looking at some things that we're wondering, and also at the end, a little ode to Ser Jorah. Then after that, we will turn to flaying our own fingers so that tonight doesn't seem too bad in comparison. Right, we're going to get to it nice and quick today. We've got a lot to get through. You'll obviously listen to everything else. You'll probably need to prepare as well, so let's get going. No longer ill, I don't think, apart from possibly broken hand, is Lady Buckley. Lady Buckley, how is your hand?
Really sore after Save the Avengers with you.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was something else other than Game of Thrones, where I have to sit and watch you cry.
You cried as well.
Yeah, I love it too. It's just very interesting. I'm one of those people who really enjoys watching your emotions play out.
A bit creepy.
That's what a wife does.
Okay. And how are you feeling about tonight?
Excited. Worried about how long it's going to be. As much as I really want every episode to be as long as possible, worried that I'm going to fall asleep before 4 o'clock in the morning.
I don't think it'll let you fall asleep.
So before tonight's episode, we're going to rewatch episode 2, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, again. And just so we're clear, we don't watch the next time on. And we haven't seen any of the released photos, which I know there are. So forgive our intentional ignorance. And this week, we're not going to be doing any specific battle predictions. You can make a face, but they can't see you. No specific battle predictions for tonight, but we'll allow more than last time. So, Lady Buckley, do you want to start off with our interruptions talk? We're looking at two interruptions.
Okay, well, the first one was Dany and Sansa. Because obviously, they were having a really nice kind of reconciliation. There was a lot of kind of putting things past each other, but then it was coming to a head, talking about, well, what's next, what's after, which is a good thing, because they're all thinking about, well, what if they do win? They're not just completely resigned to losing, which has been some characters' outlook.
It's a bit of a different, actually, because you've got Bran saying, is there an after, and kind of everyone else is preparing to die, so it is kind of good to see someone thinking about it. I thought Sansa looked pretty good, pretty awesome in her armour, but Daenerys didn't have any yet, I guess because she got a dragon.
Well, that's it. Daenerys
didn't need any armour.
Daenerys' armour is her dragon, she doesn't need it, it's got the full protection of Drogon.
So I think the main point that comes out of this is Sansa, like you say, is thinking about after, so is Daenerys, but for me Sansa came off pretty well. It looked like she wasn't out to kind of, she's not out to score political points. It's not just her being catty or something towards Daenerys. She's actually concerned about the North and what's going to happen. And she does make some good points, like about how her and Jon were the ones who retook the North, so why should they be handing it to to Daenerys? What do you think?
Well, I get that. I don't think she was being catty, but I didn't think it was the time or the place. Again, I felt that Sansa chooses the wrong moments every time. She sat there and we're trying to think about, well, how can we survive? And she's thinking, well, when we do survive, what's the plan? And she's starting up an argument that could be left until afterwards. It's not as soon as they're going to win, Daenerys is just going to go, well, no, you've all got a side with me. They can have that argument afterwards.
You've just said that it's a good thing that someone's talking about afterwards.
No, it's a positive thing that they have that outlook. I don't think it's a good thing. I think Sansa brought that up at the wrong time.
Mm.
And there wasn't really a need for it, especially when they were having their reconciliation. She was bringing up these political points at the wrong time. Was it necessary?
Well, so this starts off, Daenerys has come on Ser Jorah's advice, and they start off friendly enough, as you say.
Well, yeah, Dany was coming to be friendly, to try and have that reconciliation, and it was working until Sansa decided we're going to talk about something that may never happen, and it's quite likely it's not going to happen.
I think the problem is with Sansa is that she's had too many people come in with the friendly face in her past and then turn around and do something awful or stab her in the back, so it doesn't really work with her anymore. Whether it's genuine or not, you can't blame her for seeing a smiling face and thinking, well, Peter Baelish used to smile at me as well.
Yeah, but it's not about her trust, and she doesn't have to trust Dany, but what she didn't have to do was to cause an argument when that's only going to rile things up right before a very important battle.
The other option is just to lay over and roll over and let Daenerys... Well, she does have good points that they won the North, not Daenerys. Daenerys is a stranger. So I can see a point of why should they hand it over. I get what you're saying, that all right, time and place, but...
That's the whole point. That point didn't need to be made at that point.
But do you agree with her point?
I'm still on the side of Daenerys in that we need to think about actual survival first before we think about the Seven Kingdoms. And then after that, then they can have this big political discussion. And instead of saying, well, no, we don't want to side with you, Daenerys, why can't it be an alliance?
Well, the thing is, because they don't want to bow down. That's the whole thing, isn't it? Because every time they do that, something bad happens.
It's because that's in Sansa's mind and in several people's minds in the show. It's not about, well, why can't we work together? We can be a separate entity, but we can work with you, which is what, when Asha went across with Yara. Went across, she said, well, look, we want you help us take the Iron Islands, I will be queen of the Iron Islands and we'll support your claim. Why can't they do that? Why can't they say, we will be a separate entity, but we will support your claim to the Seven Kingdoms?
Well,
she's
yeah.
not doing that. Sansa's saying, well, we don't want that. We just want to be separate from you completely. And there wasn't the time, it wasn't the time or the place, and it's not necessary right now. Most of them are going to die.
Yeah, but ignoring... imagine that wasn't, like, around the corner. I still think you can see Sansa's point of... where they were ruled before, like, that's what her brother died for, that's what her mother died for, was fighting for independence. So you can see why she's like, I don't want to, and especially she was in the hands of the Lannisters, she doesn't want to be ruled by the Iron Throne anymore.
But if she's this big political mind that she's supposed to be building up to be, why is she being so outright then? Why isn't she being more political about it? Why is she coming outright saying these things? It just wasn't necessary.
No, I disagree. Let's talk about Daenerys. So I think she was smart to take Jorah's advice and come to Sansa, because she had already been getting the cold shoulder a bit, and you can see Sansa's not really respecting her authority as queen. She walks out of the trial and, you know, talks out of turn, or whatever you want to call it. But Daenerys makes a good play at the beginning talking about Jon, because that's obviously their connection here, and you can see that she does care for Jon genuinely, and I think that comes across to Sansa, and I think they're both being genuine when they're having that little friendly moment. But then you can also see she cares for the Iron Throne.
Well, yeah, she cares for him. And I think she was being the bigger person and putting this, like, this kind of, I don't know, whatever it was, one-upmanship behind her to do this. It wasn't Sansa who came forward, it was her who came forward. Yes, it was on Jorah's advice, but it was her that she didn't have to do that, and she chose to do that. And she does clearly care for him and was trying to do right by his family, and they were trying to have this reconciliation, which is what I was saying about Sansa, is that that was happening. I don't see why, if she's trying to be shrewd about things, why she decided to choose that point to actually 180 and go back and go, well, no.
Mm.
And just put a kick her heels in like a child.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's been charged.
No, but it is. The action of it is not using these political thoughts that she's supposed to be learning, isn't it? When it comes down to it, it's not her going, right, here's how I can play this. I can play this out, and then once this has happened, then I can use these things that I've learned and I can actually put this down. It wasn't a point to be done that. Instead, it was, well, what about my point? We're friends now, but what about my point?
It's not just her point, is it? She's trying to protect her people. If you look at, so it's her and John almost ruling the North in tandem.
But it's, like you said, it's her and John.
Yeah.
She's not...
Yeah, but John's not doing anything.
Right, because John's considering, we need to do this first. So what's most important for our people is that we survive.
Okay, that's valid point.
But she's not considering that. She's not considering what John wants. She's going with, yeah, but what about the North? What about the North? Yeah. These are my people. It's his people. And hers. Yeah. There's no reason why she should be going, no, I'm going to kick my heels in now, at this point in time. It wasn't necessary.
But this is what... All right, we're getting repetitive now. But this is the point, because John's not thinking about his people, and she knows how fragile their hold on the North is. She knows they need the Lords, and she's seen it all before, and John's thrown it away for a girl, almost. That's how it's viewed by the Lords. You can see they're all not happy.
Yeah, but
so she has to think about after, because someone's got
it. There's no need to think about Arthur, because he's not thrown away for, like, her, in the sense that Rob did. He's done it to survive. Yes, he does clearly care for her, but the whole point was he didn't want to bend the knee. What he wanted to do was survive.
I think that they consider the optics. He goes away. It's the exact same thing as Rob. They go away on South for this noble cause, come back with a girl. I've broken all their promises.
But there's not... what's happened, if they're so short-sighted to see it as, oh no, he's just doing it for a girl, not seeing it for, well, actually there's this big army of the dead coming, we needed these armies, we needed these dragons, we needed the power of this queen.
Yeah, but you can flip that 50-50, can't you? Because you can say Daenerys, well, this is the exact same thing we said before. You can say that Daenerys, that why do you need him to bend the knee? Because if the army of the dead come, you're fucked anyway.
Right, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying anything about the way that she approached it beforehand, but if you're saying it from Sansa's and the Lord's point of view of the North, who cares what he's done right now? Care afterwards. You can, like, have all this arguments afterwards. Why at this point, when you've got all these White Walkers about to come on, you're all about to either die or have support, would you be causing an argument with the support?
Okay. All right. Well, we're circling the drain here. Let's shift it back to Daenerys in this conversation. So I think what we've got to remember is family is actually a fairly foreign concept to Daenerys. She doesn't really have to... Normally, it's what she says goes. She deals with Jorah and Barristan and Missandei, or, you know, enemies. Family is a different battle at all, and she only really grew up with Viserys, which is not this kind of family. So you can see why she's having difficulty laying down these tracks with Sansa. Is obviously quite defensive. I don't think she's even spoken to Arya yet, and... you're not going to get a good conversation out of Bran.
Yeah, but when you look at it, then family's a quite a foreign concept to Sansa. She's been away from her family for so long, and even when she was with Jon, she hated him. She acted like Catelyn.
Not in the show.
Well, when they reconcile, the first thing she says, yeah, I wasn't nice to you.
Yeah, but...
It's the same from the books as it is in the show.
Let's concentrate on Daenerys and stop going back to Sansa.
No, but we're talking about them together, and we're saying that, well, you're saying that it's a foreign concept for her, this family, and like Sansa's trying to do this family. Well, actually, it's a foreign concept to Sansa as well.
Not as foreign, though.
But she chose things over her family.
What things?
Well, she chose to go to Cersei over her father.
Not in the show.
Okay.
That's book only.
Alright, but it's like, you can say in the show even the same thing, that she lied.
Yeah, she was like a teenage girl then. I know it's annoying, but you can't really pin it on her.
No, but there's no way that Arya would have done the same thing.
Well, no, but Arya also wouldn't have survived King's Landing as a prisoner.
No, because Arya would have been loyal to her family and then have been killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
so what's good about that?
No, but you're going saying that Daenerys is such a foreign concept of family because she's been on her own and she's been isolated and things like that. Well, so has Sansa. You can't say one without the other. You can't say Sansa's got this big loyalty to her family.
But I can, because Sansa grew up with her family.
Right, but the family that we're talking is between her and Jon.
Yeah. She still grew up with him.
She said she was horrible to who, yeah. To, and now is suddenly she's like, yes, you're my family. It's the same thing as to say that Daenerys had a brother.
Yeah, but it wasn't even a familial relationship, was it? She was owned by him.
But Jon and Sansa was the same relationship. She wasn't very nice to him.
Come on, Jon and Sansa is not the same relationship right. as Viserys Daenerys. Let's get back to the interruption anyway, because we're drifting off. So I think it's a worthy interruption, because that Theon and Sansa was one of the better scenes of the episode. A very emotional moment again. It does bear thinking that Theon hadn't appeared at that moment, whether it would have got a lot worse between them and one of them had said something they later regretted or that you can't go back from. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I've said it multiple times already. I don't think it was necessary, and I think it would have just caused more of a rift between them.
I think Daenerys is quite quickly distancing herself. Again, Arya's not really involved, but obviously not on good terms with Sansa. And then later, she's starting to distrust Sam and Bran as well with the second interruption we're going to talk about.
I think with that one, though, that's a lot more of that's a quick reaction from her. It's not a thought-out thing. And I don't think she's necessarily quickly distancing herself. I think that she's being pushed away by Sansa. I don't think that Arya and Bran have anything to do with it. I don't think she's quickly distant from them family in general. I just think Sansa... I think she's pushing her away.
All right, we're going to have to disagree on that one. Let's move on anyway, because we're going to run out of time. So on to that next one of Daenerys and Jon down in the crypts. It's towards the end of the episode, so we could probably guess that an interruption was coming. We had wondered how long Jon would keep this little revelation under wraps, and it turns out not very long. We'd seen through the episode him keeping away from Daenerys and leaving early and kind of giving her the cold shoulder, but it's obviously been weighing heavily on him, and he had that nice little scene with Sam and Ed and remembering better times. He even had a rare laugh, which was quite nice.
I think with that, it was nice in that he clearly had been weighing on him. He was thinking about it. He wasn't just thinking, well, I'm king, I've got this claim.
Yeah.
He was thinking, well, what's the best decision? And the fact that he does say it to her before the battle, I think it was more important to him that she know who he is, not about his... claim per se.
He wanted to be at the front of it. He was being quite neddy about it, wasn't he? Kind of keeping it to himself, didn't obviously weighing heavily on him, but I don't think he was ever going to not tell her. I think that's probably why he was avoiding her, because he knew as soon as he talked to her, he was going to tell her straight up.
Yeah.
Before they talk about that, I was a bit surprised Daenerys went with the Rhaegar raped Lyanna side of the story in front of the statue, because you would have thought that Viserys had told her the tale that the pro Targaryen sides go with, that he stole her away because he loved her and all that. Maybe Barristan would have as well. I'm not sure where she's heard of the rape side.
Maybe that was what Viserys did portray to her, though, in the sense that he was so bitter about the fall of their family.
Could be. Could be. It'd be surprising, but it could be. Maybe she just did it to appease Jon, believing that he believes the rape story and didn't want to start off on the wrong foot. She obviously looked quite moody when she was coming up to him.
I guess I think it's a lot of internal struggle, though. It's a lot of thinking, well, this is a whole big history that you've assumed.
Mm.
You've assumed you're alone, you've got me as family.
Yeah.
It's also knowing that she will be aware that he does have a claim. It's knowing that the whole reason their family collapse happened was a lie. It's everything that she knows to have happened about her family and him completely gets flipped on its head. So it's very difficult. It's a big kind of turmoil-inducing kind of idea within himself.
Yeah, that's completely life-changing. That's why you could have forgiven him for taking longer, but obviously, like we just said, he's going to go Ned and not hold back. And obviously, as you'd expect, Daenerys doesn't believe him straight off. I don't think anyone would, really, because like you say, it's such a world-breaking idea to her.
Yeah, that thing about Sam and Bran, like, I know she's saying, oh, it's your brother, it's your best friend, but I think that was more gut reaction to think, well, it's when you first get confronted with something very, very shocking, you tend to defend yourself, don't you? I think that was her way of defending herself, and she hasn't let it sink in or think about it. They haven't been able to have that discussion because of the interruption.
I think it's almost a self-protection device, because she could, there's two ways of her for her to think about it if she wants to be suspicious. She can suspect John is making it up because he wants her throne or whatever, and she's obviously not willing to believe that. So the other option is to think that John isn't lying, he generally believes this, but he is being lied to. And that's probably easier pill for her to swallow, that Sam and Bran, these people she doesn't know, she probably can guess Sam doesn't like her very much at the moment, which is true, are feeding him false information instead, because again, the whole political, you know, she could be a bit Viserys and be a bit paranoid about it.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to that, but at the same time, I still think it's very much gut reaction at the moment. She, like I said, it hasn't, the interruption happened at the point where they weren't able to talk about it between themselves. They weren't able to even have a, almost, not a reconciliation moment, but like a goodbye before they had to run off and deal with what was to come.
Oh, so it, as interruptions go, it's a pretty big one. Army of the Dead arriving, so you can forgive them for leaving it and going off to their dragons, whatever they're doing. But so assuming they all survive, well, not all, I don't think any, not all of them are, but assuming these guys survive and this comes up as an issue again, can you see Daenerys believing her throne and her claim and all of this to be in jeopardy? And again, if she believes steadfast that this is a lie, whether John is lying or not, could you see her resorting to violence? Could she even attack John's family, supporters, North, etc., in the name of, you know, trying to help him and say, oh, John, I'm attacking them because they're lying to you, and if I get you away, then you'll be with me and we'll rule the Seven Kingdoms together. Could you see something like that down the road?
Obviously not at this point in time. At this point in time, it's not a priority, and she's not going to risk what is like a main port of support from her at the moment in this battle. Post-battle, I wouldn't say I could see her resorting to violence. I could see her questioning it, go a lot more down the route of questioning rather than violence. I can see a lot more speculation and judgment, a lot more characters being pulled into question, a lot more use of maybe like Tyrion, Missandei, that than Grey Worm, for instance.
See, I could envision a Daenerys who's won the throne, but it's cost her. I think that's, he says that a lot about being a king, and they all, none of them ended up where they wanted to be. It could be a kind of flip of Robert where he did win the throne, but he wished he hadn't. I could see that happening to Daenerys, where she's won it, but she's had to hurt Jon or his loved ones in some way to get there, and she ends up wishing she hadn't. I could see that being a possibility.
It is a possibility. I think that that is something that could happen. I think what would be more likely to happen is if those kind of key players like Daenerys and Jon were to last past kind of the Army of the Dead, then it will be a lot more political basis than it being sacrificing and having, I think it'd be a lot more behind closed doors as the Game of Thrones has always been.
Right, okay, that's a lot of predictions, so we'll get away from the predictions bit. Okay, that's too many predictions, so let's move on. We're going to move on to wonders now. So we've both been wondering something about this episode. Would you like to go first, or do you want me to go first?
You can go first.
All right, I'll go first. So I've been wondering, what did Tyrion and Bran talk about? I mentioned it in an essay I wrote about Tyrion this week, that this could be, this probably slipped under the radar a bit because there's so much going on in this episode.
Definitely.
But thinking about who it is talking here, we've got Tyrion, who's one of the more curious, and he can figure things out. And he's really the only one who's bothered to ask Bran. Everyone finds Bran too awkward to talk to, so they haven't actually asked him about it. And Bran is obviously the know-it-all, so you've put one of the two greatest minds together, and I've got to think that that's going to have some kind of payback in some way, whether Tyrion hears something from Bran and knows how to use it, or Bran specifically tells Tyrion something he needs to know, or what. But it's got to come back at some point, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he could have said something about the Night King or something to do with, I don't know, the battles. But I think actually what may have been more, I think Bran knowing that he was going to put himself forward as the person to lure the Night King, that, well, actually the knowledge and things may be lost, so he could transfer some of the things that needed to be known. So maybe the Rhaegar Lyanna thing to reinforce it, maybe some things about what has happened, that, because Tyrion would be interested in any kind of history, so anything like that could be relevant to him. So it could be something about the Lannisters, it could be the fact that it was Jaime who pushed him out, it could be anything that's happened that not necessarily is common knowledge.
Yeah, I think it's got to be some kind of secret, but I'm just wondering if it's something blatant, like he's just going to tell Tyrion about Rhaegar and Lyanna so that Tyrion can back up Sam or whatever, persuade Daenerys, or whether he says something and he's not even intending it to be something useful, and Tyrion just works out because Tyrion's got that kind of mind. He's like, oh, I can actually use that.
Yeah, actually, or whether it's actually none of these things, it's not going to be brought up again, it's just going to go by the wayside. It was more a point to say that these two characters, with Tyrion and his interest, and he's always trying to learn and discover new things, that actually that was a moment for him, because there's a lot of things that, I don't know whether you've seen them, but I've seen them, people saying that Tyrion's not been very smart recently. But in terms of strategy and battle and things like that, yes. But why can we say that he's not smart? He is smart, but it's more based upon the things that he is knowledgeable about.
It's also just a nice callback, because they do actually have a little connection of, like, when Tyrion gave Bran the saddle and they quite liked each other. And
Cripples, Bastard and Broken Things.
Yeah, quite. Oh, okay, what does Lady Buckley wonder then?
You know me, all mine's wondering what's going to happen. And I did have one, well, it wasn't even a prediction, was it? It was just something that I would like to happen, something I wonder whether it would be, like, you know what I mean, it's something that they would have considered when thinking about these things, was that the whole Arya and her list, there's still names on that list, and that names that haven't been checked off, as it were. But it would be nice if the list was almost flipped on its head, because she is going through a transformation in terms of her character, her confidence. She has completely had a, like you said, with all the other ones we've done, like character arcs. It would be nice if, say, there are all these big moments where people are dying, if she was one of them, that actually it was the people she's lost or the people that she misses rather than the ones she wants to kill. So the people she's doing it for, so Ned, Catelyn, Rickon.
Oh, Rickon. Oh. Yeah, that would be cool. That would be a good send-off.
It's not quite a Wonders in Tyrion and Bran, but actually a lot of the moments that were within the episode were so kind of fulfilling that you can wonder what's going on in their heads and things like that, but it's actually quite nice just to have the moment, as it were.
Definitely. Okay, so very quickly to finish then, I had intended to write this as an essay, but time has ticked on and I've been a bit too busy writing other essays. So I thought that this episode is quite a big one for Sir Jorah, or not even just this episode, the first two, in fact. Because although Book Jorah is certified knobhead, Show Jorah is actually quite nice. And he's kept this loyalty of Daenerys, even though it's been made clear, you know, it's never going to happen. But last season we saw him come back after being cured, and that was quite emotional. And now in this season he seems to be going about paying off debts and doing right by people other than Daenerys. Normally he's just considered Daenerys, but now we see him in episode one making sure Sam is thanked and possibly rewarded for saving his life at the Citadel. We see him fight Tyrion's corner. We see him persuade Daenerys to go and talk to Sansa. And near the end, we also see him try and protect little Lyanna Mormont. It's not his fault. He fails because quite hard to talk to the animal woman. But also, even more than that, he gets Heartsbane from Sam, and he says he's going to use it to protect the realms of men. And I think it's quite a nice tie-up for Jorah, because now he's finally fulfilling the father he left behind's role. He's going to be wielding a Valyrian sword. He lost a Valyrian sword. He's going to be protecting the realms of men, which is exactly what his dad did.
I think if we go back to kind of where you started when you were saying that about where he was, and yeah, when he went away, he was sent away by her to go get a cure, and Sam was curing him, things like this. She still had Barristan at that point. I think with him now gone, she's stepped up and taken a lot more of kind of the wisdom role. He's stepped away from the kind of more adoration side. He's looking a lot more towards what is this, how can he be the person that she looks to for support, advice, for protection, as like Barristan was. He's taken a lot more of that role, a lot less of what his original kind of role with her was. I think that's definitely true. The points with Lyanna, yeah, you're right, he's gone through a lot of other things where he's kind of settling his debts with people. He settled his debt, well, almost settled, as it were, his debt with Sam.
He tried his hardest.
But I think the bit with Lyanna was him trying to settle with his father. Obviously, he couldn't do that. And him having that connection with Sam is a connection to his father with that, but trying to defend her. I think it is noble of him, but I think it's also at the same time not looking at the character of their family. Because from the start of her and her character, she would never have, she'd never go and hide in the crypts, as it were.
No, but I guess he doesn't even know her really, does he? Because she's like 12.
True,
he's been gone for like a decade.
Like, the character of their family is not
stubborn.
She's not dissimilar, as it were. And like, unlike other families, she says that her, was it her mother or aunt, fought for Rob and died.
They all did.
And they don't recognise anyone but the king in the north.
His name is Stark.
That's what I mean. So there's lots of things like that. And yes, he got Heartsbane, but to me, that just means that something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, well, so he's done these nice things, and he's grown up, basically, and tried to repay his debts, and he's... Like, there's always that missed connection that with two major characters of father and son, and obviously never interacted in Geor and Jorah. And Sam's kind of the link between them. And he did have a little conversation with John about him as well. But to see him take up that mantle of protecting the realms of men, and he's got what he lost in Heartsbane and stuff like that. So does that now seal his death warrant? Do you think he makes it out of tonight's episode?
I think he sealed his death warrant. I think the thing that's going to happen from that is he's going to do something heroic, he's going to die, and someone's going to pick up Heartsbane.
Maybe.
Someone's going to pick up the mantle, as it were.
Could be.
And whether that is that he fights alongside Lyanna and Lyanna picks it up or whatever, or someone else, so Sam picks it up because he's was with his father and things like that, I think he has, from his goodness and the fact that he's done really well to build up his character, I think he's come to the end of the line.
I think he's a goner. Yeah, he can't do all that good stuff and get out. And especially as when Pod's singing his lovely song, like just at the like doesn't want to leave bit, it's Jorah reining up on his horse, and he just like, oh, he's gonna have to leave, and he don't want.
Oh yeah, and as of all the characters, like he's one of the ones that actually I don't see where his arc could go. Like, he's had
he's completed it all now. Yeah.
He's had a really good development. You've seen the part now with his reconciliation with his family, because actually when like he first arrives, I was thinking that maybe there would be a conflict with Lyanna and the fact that he's back, but actually that doesn't seem to have happened. It seemed more that he's had that reconciliation with his family. He's grown and matured. He's not going for the adoration of Daenerys anymore. He's not looking to win her kind of love, as it were. He's more stepped into Barristan's role. And so, because of that, he is, as Barristan was, quite an easy character. Well, not it's never easy to kill a character like that, but more of a, you said it, cannon fodder.
I think if we allow one small prediction then, I think we could easily see him saving one of the dragons or something like that. just one last thing for Daenerys.
And yeah, heartbreaking for Daenerys.
Yeah.
Because it could be something to go with the choice, the conflict she's having at the moment between, like, she's having so many conflicts right now with Sansa, obviously with Jon just before it happened, with Sam. It could be that actually he saves Sam.
Could be. Or he saves someone, probably.
But yeah, but something that...
He does something good.
It goes against what Daenerys wanted, but at the same time, he's still got that noble side within him.
Hmm. Well, we'll find out in just over 8 hours. So we'd better get on and get to our napping, or you'll fall asleep.
I won't finish till nearly 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm definitely going to fall asleep.
You're not going to fall asleep.
I've got to be in work for 7.
It won't let you fall asleep. Okay, right. Go and ice your hand, go and have a nap, say goodbye, Lady Buckley.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody, go and hug your loved ones, go and remember these characters, because, like we say, it's only a few hours left for our world is pretty much collectively shattered. I said it before, I think Sam hit the nail on the head with his death is forgetting speech. You know, these characters aren't going to come back. We're going to get some probably quite brutal deaths in a lot of them. We've had really positive episodes. It's going to go the other way. No doubt we'll get some kind of Disney-ish moments where someone dies in a blaze of glory or saves someone or what have you. But
we're also going to get a lot of characters just not get anything of that kind. They're just going to be ripped apart, going to be trampled over. That'll be that. We haven't got time for all of them to have the death scene that they deserve. Some bad stuff's going to... It's going to go down. So, yeah, I'm glad I got to cheer you all up for that. Before we go, very quickly, just normal shout-outs. Please check out all the History of Westeros streams that I'm very lucky enough to be helping with. They're doing great stuff. They've got good guests on. Lady Gwen, Joanna Robinson is on this week. Go and have a look. Shout-out to everyone at Ice and Fire Con. Hope you're having a good time. I'm not jealous of you. I definitely don't hate you, I promise. We don't say it enough, but Emily, who designed our wonderful Isle of Faces logo, she is there having a blast. Again, we're not jealous of you. We don't hate you. I promise. And finally, before we go, one last call out to Night of the Seven Kingdoms. It's obviously it's going to be overshadowed soon. In 8 hours, we're only going to be able to talk about the battle and whatever this episode is called. But I honestly feel proud and honoured to have watched that. I was saying to a friend the other day, I'm very, very lucky to be living in a time where I can watch Avengers Endgame and Night of the Seven Kingdoms and this episode all within a week of each other. So thank you. I know none of you are ever going to hear it, but thank you to everyone involved in making this show, even in the smallest way. Okay. Death Day comes. I guess we'll see you on the other side. We'll have an episode. We'll have another mini cast, probably Tuesday-ish. Hopefully, you'll be able to hear us through the tears. We will see you then. Enjoy.